Hello, and welcome to the Tavern Chat Podcast. I am your host, Eric Tenkar, your bartender in the OSR, and this is another in a Designers and Makers series of Fireside Chats. Today, I have with me Janet from World Anvil. Janet.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. As I explained to you before we got into this, I'm going to ask you five basic questions about pretty much your gaming history, but it's to ground you and ground our listeners into a little background on you. So if you are ready,
I am ready.
All right. So tell us about your first role-playing game experience.
Oh, okay. This is quite a silly story.
Wasn't the best.
Oh, yeah. I went to a school that had a role-playing game club. We played D&D. It must have been second edition, I guess, or 3.5. I was like 11 at the time, right?
Okay.
So it was me and a group of, I think there was five of us, and one of them was DMing, and it was all of our first experience with these kinds of games. Like, our older siblings played, but for us it was really new. And I played a mage, of course.
Of course.
Very sappy elf character, I think. There was a certain point where we ran across something that we definitely couldn't fight. And it was part of this adventure module, which I couldn't tell you which one. And basically what we were supposed to do was, like, back away and not engage with it. But what we did instead was get naked and distract it.
I'm afraid to even ask how that happened, but
it was very successful. Our GM went with it. It worked. We got the treasure. We saved the person. That was my first D&D game, age 11. Hilarious.
Age 11 went naked. Well, not literal. All right. That.
As players, we were wearing clothes. As characters, we were naked.
Right. Okay. Whatever works. Now, your DM, I give them a lot of credit for going along with that. And at age 11, deciding that going naked would be a distraction?
We were very distracting.
Apparently so. So what is your go-to RPG system these days?
Right now it's 5e, because I'm doing a couple of campaigns in 5e. I like Alternity very much. I really enjoyed that. As a system, I played a sci-fi campaign in it. It was perfect for that.
Okay.
I was a fan of Pathfinder, a bit worried about Pathfinder 2. Pathfinder 1 I enjoyed, but what I really liked about that was the premise of Pathfinders themselves. So it was a lot about the world. I wasn't particularly tied to the system.
Right.
But in general, I'm very sort of narrative based when I play, so I don't mind so much about the system, as long as I can tell a damn good story and live a damn good story. The system I don't really mind, as long as it sort of makes sense to me.
Fair enough. All right, so I got another question for you. Now, you came in, how many years ago did you come into gaming?
Well, again, like, I started playing when I was 11, so now so that's 20 years. Holy crap, that's 20 years ago. Holy crap.
Nice.
So I'm like 31 now. And then I didn't play for ages. And then when I met Dimitri, who is now my husband, and sitting very silently next to me, he may or may not speak during this. We will find out.
Hello.
There we go. The man husband. So when I met Dimitri and he started telling me that he played D&D, I was, you know, I knew how much fun it was. I was really excited, and we started playing campaigns again, but that was 7 years ago now. So that was when I got back into it, and since then I've been playing off and on. I've done a bunch of campaigns. Would never leave it again.
God bless. I understand that very well. All right, so you came in 20 years ago, so you came in 2E had just wrapped up. 3rd edition had just kicked off a few years prior, if I remember right. Because that's when I took my leave of gaming for a while because of work issues.
Sure.
But so you never... Did you ever play basic D&D?
No, where, I don't think so.
All right. Well, basic D&D, obviously a lot less classes than third edition or Pathfinder, but your non-human races were a class unto themselves. So every elf was an elf class. They weren't a fighter, a cleric, or a magic user, a thief. They were pretty much like a fighter magic user combination. Dwarves were all fighters. When you play in your games as a player, how deep an option do you want? Do you want a multitude of classes, or do you prefer something like the traditional tropes or an iconic elf or fighter or whatever?
I'm a big believer in mixing things up. So Dimitri is very often my game master, and one of the things he hates most is when I start talking about character concepts and I'm like, I'm going to be an orc bard. And he's like, no, I'm going to be a halfling barbarian. No. So we go through this for a while, and finally I come up with a concept that is wacky enough that I am happy, but is normal enough that Dimitri is happy, and then we can play. And this usually takes about 2 weeks of me going through all of the ridiculous things. Like, I'm going to play, I don't know, like a water elemental that's afraid of water or something. And Dimitri says, no. I'm one of those players. I'm very well behaved once I'm at the table, but I go a little crazy in concept. So I'd rather stay away from the archetypes, just because I feel like they've been done so much that I want to explore something new. So that's usually my approach, is like, what angle can I use? Like, how can I make this something that is unique to me and is going to be an interesting game for me?
Fair enough. That makes a lot of sense. And God bless your husband for being able to make those compromises in the end.
He's a patient man. He has to be.
All right. Next question, and it's certainly gaming related. The whole idea of save or die, where a single saving throw can mean your character's life or death, regardless of hit points or level. Some people love it. Some people despise it. Where do you stand on it?
I think it depends on the kind of campaign you're playing, and it depends how invested you are in the campaign. Like, nobody minds losing a first level character that they've not really bonded with yet. In fact, it happens. I was playing a game with Guy Sklanders, who is the face of How to Be a Great GM. He's one of our affiliates, and he's awesome. And we were playing, and right at the end of the one-shot campaign, my character died. And I was sad, but you know what? It happens. It's okay. I made the character 2 minutes before the game. And even though we'd grown close, I was okay with it. If that had been a 12th level character, I would have lost my shit. So I think it depends a lot on, and maybe that's what your GM wants. Like, maybe that's the experience he's trying to give to you. But I think it depends so much on where you are within the campaign and these kinds of things as to whether it's a good idea or not. And also how far the campaign still has to go, because you don't want to stop a story in the middle, and what the GM's plan is then. So if the character dies, if you get a TPK because you miss the saving throw or whatever it is, then what is the story stopped? What happens? Does evil triumph over good? Because to me, that's not a good story. So these are the considerations. So if the DM has a plan, I think it can be really effective. So if, for example, if the DM sees you playing multiple characters, some of whom die, but eventually you reach the objective, whatever that objective is, fantastic. Great, great plot device. If it's just you're dead and then it's anticlimactic and you're like, huh, all right, I guess we'll start again then, shall we?
If you haven't realized it already, Janet is very loose when it comes to rules and very adamant when it comes to story.
Yeah.
And that's something that defines her. She plays every system depending on what will add to her personal, essentially, collection of weirdness of characters and beauty of stories.
Yeah, I'm a writer in my spare time. So for me, it's all about the story, not just the character that I'm playing and their role within the story, but the story as a living thing from by itself. So that's how I make my decisions about the campaign that I'm playing. And I realize as I'm saying that I sound like a complete nutcase, but
probably she is, but it's a different story.
But no, that's one of the more detailed answers I've gotten to that. People often go on the emotional level of it, and like you said, if it's a one shot, if it's a short campaign, if it's at a convention, it's one thing. If it's a campaign you expect to be running for years, character death is certainly rough, especially when you don't have much of a control over it.
Right. Exactly.
My thought on the whole save or die concept is it's like spice. If you use too much of it, you ruin the dish.
Yeah.
If it's not there at all, it might be bland.
Yeah.
But it should never be a total surprise. I mean, if you're going for the big MacGuffin at the end, and you know it's obvious, it looks unprotected. Yeah. Well, there's a good chance that there's something you should be looking for that may cause save or die. I don't like the idea of a random trap in a dungeon hallway could kill you.
Yeah, exactly. It has to tie into the story and the epicness. But the other thing I would say about that is it depends what death means. Because in D&D, death is not it's not forever. Like, you can be brought back in various ways. There are things you can do. In some worlds, death is forever. And then I would say save or die is a very different mechanic, because when there's no revolving door to the afterlife, it's a much more finite thing and you need to use it in a different way.
See, that's the thing. Like, when I've been DMing Dungeons and Dragons in its various forms since, I don't know, 1980 or so. And I've never liked the idea of the whole revolving door of death. That take the body and bring him to the nearest cleric, and the cleric will heal him. Because especially in the older systems, like AD&D, raised dead and resurrection cost that cleric years of his life. So, you know, careless adventurers are not going to simply get resurrected or raised simply because they want to, when the cleric has to give up, you know, years of his time on Earth or whatever the planet you're playing on. So I'd rather the characters die. But
it's an important distinction.
Yeah. Well, I could get in trouble for the first one. But I'd rather character death be based upon the character's decisions and for the most part, and less randomness. They should go, oh shit, I probably shouldn't have done that, as opposed to fuck, who knew that was coming?
It is always about the mechanics are trying to support the idea of having raised stakes.
Yeah.
If you know that death is an option, you should be more careful, and you will find ways to make the drama in a scene more importantly about the drama than effectively being the crazy hobo that goes there, murder hobo, and just goes there to kill stuff. And I think that is what it's trying to prevent as a system.
Well, the crazy hobo is always a lot of fun. Sorry. Well, a little bias on my end.
No, fair enough.
Alright. Let's get to the final question, and then we'll get to the hex crawl aspect of this.
Oh, yeah.
Alright. So you came into gaming at about 11 years old.
Yeah.
It's now 20 years later.
Uh-huh.
So what would the 11-year-old you think if they could see what you'd be doing in the gaming hobby at this point in your life?
She would lose her shit. Partly, I think she'd be furious with me because 11-year-old me was absolutely convinced that she was going to be a musician. And she would look at me now and being like, you sold out, man, you sold out. But at the same time, like, I don't think 11-year-old me even sort of realized that I could do what we're doing now, which is basically helping people succeed in the world of writing and D&D and like tabletop RPGs and stuff. So I think in a way she'd be like, you sold out, man, you sold out. But another way she'd be pretty freaking impressed. So I'm happy with that. I can reconcile that with 11-year-old me.
Nice. All right, well, that leads us to our next part of this conversation then. Exactly, explain to the audience exactly what it is that you are doing in the hobby these days. Because I find it very interesting.
You mean with World Anvil?
Of course.
Yeah. So I don't know if, do you know the backstory of World Anvil?
I do not know the backstory of World Anvil.
So, in, it's hilarious. In like June of 2017, I was trying to write a book and I was failing because I was trying to write an enormous epic fantasy book with races and history and geography and just so much world building. And I was just losing track of the world building the whole time. And Dimitri looked on at this and he was like, huh, I can see you're struggling. Let me help you.
Okay.
So he started thinking about how he could make something that would help me track all the world building behind my novels, track the plots a little bit, this kind of stuff. He started building it. He talked to a friend of his who was a DM. Dimitri himself is a DM. He's been playing tabletop role-playing games since he was about six, I think.
Seven.
You know, we've always been really involved with the hobby. And he showed this sort of prototype of World Anvil to his friend, and his friend was like, oh my god, I need this for my GMing, like, to keep track of everything, because, dear god, if I have to write something else on a napkin and then lose it, I'm gonna lose my mind. And so, yeah, it really, like, that was the start. It's, like, the biggest present I never asked for. And it started as a hobby, just sort of running this website that helped people keep track of their world building. And from there, it just got really crazy. So these days, World Anvil is a world-building platform. It's a campaign manager. It's got interactive maps. It helps DMs plan their plots and put together their homebrew campaigns and then run them. We've got a digital storytelling screen. So you can have all of your notes in front of you. It's like having the DM screen at your table, but on World Anvil. So you just have one tab open and everything is in there that you need. And for novelists, it helps them keep track of the worlds behind. So behind the book, behind the series, that a lot of the concept stuff. I write my writing journals in World Anvil as well. So if I'm at a point that I'm stuck, I will sit down and journal in World Anvil, because it means I can add in all the characters and mention in everything so that when I go back to the journal later, I know what I was talking about. So that's really what it's become, is this sort of support mechanism for creatives, which is pretty cool. So that's what we're doing in the hobby right now. We're supporting other people to do world building and then to release their stuff to the world if they want to.
Hex has shown me a few shots and I guess not just live screen shares of him going with the World Anvil software and zooming in on things like Bard's Gate, which he's uploaded.
Yeah.
And it blows my mind.
Pretty cool, huh?
It is extremely cool. And how much you can drill into it, how deep you can go.
Yeah, like, that's one of the things I really like about it is, something that you, something that one struggles with, something I struggled with, and something that a lot of people struggle with world building is granularity. So having the feeling of scope and knowing how big something is and having that big picture and also having those granular details. And that's something World Anvil is really amazing for. So you can really go right into the nitty gritty, talk about like recipes of the food traditions in a particular place, if you want to, if you need to. And you can also talk about massive geological superstructures, if you want to. Like, you have that ability, and then you can keep track of it all. So yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I like most about using it.
I don't want to say I was overwhelmed. I was, like I said, stunned by the depth. It's beyond anything that I've ever played with. I've used some campaign management software, and I've used VTTs.
Sure.
So I'm not what's the word I'm looking for? I'm not a total novice to the list, but I just think it's amazing, you know, how far you've come with this.
Thank you so much. I call World Anvil my baby, and it's a big, needy baby. You know, Dimitri and I are both working on it super hard. It's only been up for a year and a half, so we are still technically in beta. I keep having to remind people of this, but
you're still in beta.
Yeah, it's not. This is not even its final form.
Not even close to where it's supposed to be.
So wow. One of the things we're really looking forward to is improving the user experience, because Dimitri is actually a user experience designer, but he's also the only programmer working on the thing right now. So he doesn't have time to do the user experience. He's just trying to get the features out so that we have the thing in a place that we want it. It's so nice of you, and your words are so kind, but we're not done yet. Do you know what I mean?
I'm floored from what I've seen already. That's what blows my mind here. What I have seen is leaps and bounds beyond similar software. So.
Oh, well, thank you. That's really kind. As I say, it's our passion. We wake up in the morning, we talk about World Anvil. We go to bed, we talk about World Anvil. We go out for a walk, we talk about World Anvil. It is our entire life right now, to the point that it got slightly unhealthy. We've been taking steps to restore work-life balance so that we actually have some life. Even a little bit would be nice.
All right, so if it's still in beta, what are the current plans for it? Where is it going?
We have, as I say, we have a big user experience update coming up. We have something we're working on right now, which we're very excited to release, but I can't tell you much about it now.
Arrgh.
Because it's still super secret.
We can come and talk to you about it when it's out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the moment is out. Okay. It should be out in about a month, we're looking at.
And
maybe
just
a bit
to explain
longer.
Why, and because we didn't used to be like that. We used to be very open with what we're releasing and shout it out the world because we wanted everybody to know and be excited about it. But we found out the last 6 months that there was a thing of people joining the guild, learning about World Anvil, spending about a month in that, and then going out and saying, I have created this unique first-time seen thing called X. And
we'd be like, well, we made that like 6 months ago, and you were in a guild, so you definitely know that. So this is lies, but thanks.
So we're trying to at least have the ability to show that we created something, you know, ourselves and not something we've been copying or something. Because that was the perception that was being created.
Yeah, exactly. So we saw this a lot, that people would come in and just sort of verbatim take our features and then say that they were new, and we'd be like, well, they're not new. So we've started being a little bit more careful about when we do feature release, before the things are released, we don't want to talk too much in public, because we want to get the thing out and be like, well, we developed this, rather than somebody else trying to take the credit. I think it's fair enough. We spend a lot of time working on these things.
About 16 hours a day.
Right, exactly.
I believe the effort into it. And yes. I've heard I've heard a similar story from one of the VTT guys that he discussed what was in the works for his VTT with a bigger player in the industry. And then before you know it, the bigger player is releasing those features.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is the way of the world, and that's okay. But again, we're so new at this. We haven't done anything like this before. So there's been a learning curve, and that's one of the things that we learned along the way is, you know, some cards keep close to your chest, not in a malicious way, but just to make sure that you get the credit for the things that you do when they come out, basically. Apart from that, we are going to have a calendars update. It has been much requested. Dimitri is still racking his brain on exactly what that's going to look like, because the thing with calendars is that everyone has their own unique idea of what they are and what they should do. And everyone thinks that their idea is the only idea, and they don't see anyone else's ideas, if you see what I mean. So everyone's like, this is what calendars should be. And then you get like five different answers. So we're still having to think about what we want it to do and how we're going to implement it, but it's gonna complement the timeline system that we already have, and basically increase usability on that front. We also have an RPG update coming out. We have a writer's update coming out, which I am super excited about. And I'm trying to think what else is in the roadmap for here.
Oh, many, many. We'll be opening up effectively all the assets in Goldanvil into people that want to use it to be able to create applications or to be able to put their own assets in their own websites.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because as I said, we're not trying to keep people in Goldanvil. We're trying to create a tool set for people to use and to make their games and their systems better. So creating an API for people to be able to use what they are doing in Goldanvil inside and out of it, that is something very important for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have a lot of updates that come soon on, not soon, but soonish, when it comes to the way that people are able to create their own homebrew systems, which also is a very important one. We've done the very first steps a month ago with allowing people to have a lot of, essentially the ability to create their own character sheet templates and then build from them whatever they want as well to have in their systems. And finally, I think that one of the biggest things that will be coming in Goldanvil in the near future is the ability for storytellers to create effectively a better organization on their system and to have even more power in terms of creating content for their players and displaying it to them.
Wow. Well, that is a large amount of content coming up. And it's not even revealing the content you can't talk to me about.
No, the very big one is not actually revealed, and that's the very, very big one.
The other thing that a lot of people ask us about is, are we going to have an app? And yes, there will be probably an app coming late 2019, early 2020. It's going to be a mobile application. It's going to be a light version, L-I-T-E, which means it's going to have some functionality, but obviously, we don't want to break people's phones, so we don't want to put the whole of World Anvil on your phone. That would just be a disaster. That's coming. Oh, and of course, the Sage update, which we just released, which basically helps people monetize their work, monetize their world building. It gives all sorts of different ways to give privileged access to people who want to see your things. And you can then sell that access, not through World Anvil, but you can use that access with your own Patreon or with your own Kickstarter or with your own storefront. And actually, we have somebody doing a Kickstarter right now, Swordsfall. It's a project that started in World Anvil. We're super excited because it's like our little grandbaby. It started in World Anvil. It's come on, Brain. It's an African-centric role-playing system, essentially. It's Afro-punk, is that correct?
Yeah.
And Matt Mercer shouted it out, and we all had like a massive squee because we're like, yay, one of our users is succeeding. Like, that's the kind of community we have. We're really lucky.
Well, I just looked it up, and wow, $37,000 raised 24 days ago.
Yeah, they're 2,000% funded or something. They did really well.
Yeah.
And I expect this is the first of many Kickstarters to come out of World Anvil, because there are a lot of worlds who are at that point where they're ready to release, almost ready to release. Ethnos is another one, which is one of the internal worlds of World Anvil, but they're just about to do a Kickstarter, I think. I'm really excited to see that. So,
well, let's not put my words in their mouth.
Yeah, I don't want to stress them out, right? I know it's their plan in the future. I mean, like, seeing members of our community using it as a professional tool to really succeed.
I mean, as Frog God Games, in fact, as well.
Yeah, exactly. Frog God Games as well, doing their latest Kickstarter release using World Anvil as well. We're just so freaking thrilled that we've found a way to help people release their content.
Because you have to understand that this was never the plan. Like, there was no idea when we started about a year and a half ago that this would happen. We didn't say, let's build a business and make money. We're like, we need a tool to do our storytelling and our RPG gaming easier. And I would like to have a place that I can build my worlds, because my biggest problem always was that I would build worlds for my RPG games, because I'm the kind of person who likes to homebrew. And either if the campaign finished, I would be losing my notebooks, or I would see them and I wouldn't be able to even read what I wrote in there. Or I would tried to do it with docs, and like Google Docs, and then I would have like thousands and thousands of like pages of something that I cannot really search for. So it's kind of like lost content and things that you cannot really, I mean, you cannot use it. It might as well not be there, effectively. And that's what we tried to tackle. And then it just happened that effectively we went from one user in October 2017 to 200,000 users last month. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the growth has been real and startling, frankly.
And what I love is that your initial vision didn't really bring you to that 200,000 mark. That's what I find to be even more special. The community made your growth.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But we've always been super community focused. Like, all of our development is based on what the community tells us. So it's all community driven. We run community competitions for the community, which are run by our community leaders. That's always been our focus, because, of course, the thing that we wanted to do was to help people. So the community is an integral part of that. And they're just freaking amazing. Like, the world building, the spirit of like camaraderie and the support is absolutely exceptional. We are so lucky.
That's awesome. Now, what would the pricing be on this for somebody if they wanted to join the World Anvil?
Well, first of all, World Anvil is free. If you want to keep your worlds public, it's completely free, and it will always be.
Nice.
The 3% of amazing people who are paying for World Anvil pay anything between $3 a month, actually $2.75 if they have a journeyman for 12 months, all the way to $200 if they are a patron of us. But
generally,
yes. But in truth, you can get all the features that you will ever need to be a world builder or a storyteller with a big group for $9.75 a month. And that becomes actually about $7 if you take it for 12 months. That is the answer, the simplest answer.
The fact that you can play with this for free is amazing.
Always the idea. You know what saddens me? That I get emails sometimes from people saying, can I get essentially the paid version for free? And I was like, or for example, for free for some days. And I was like, you have all the features apart from privacy already. There are some advanced features you don't get access to, but you can learn World Anvil without even having to touch them. And that is our modus operandi, that we have to support people into creating whatever they want, and we want to do that for free. Of course, we cannot give everything out for free, because, as we just said, we have two people here that work 16 hours a day. We are essentially paying for another 5 people to provide design for us or support for the community as much as we can. And we need to essentially have a way to support also a project that costs a lot of money every month.
Yeah.
It is as simple as that. We wish everything goes for free, but it's simply impossible. It's as simple as that. Yeah.
I mean, we just had to upgrade our storage again because, you know what, we have 200,000 users, and even if they only put one image each, that's already an awful lot of space. And something that a lot of people forget, when they come to complain at me, oh, why can't I have this for free, or why can't I have that for free? And I always get a bit sad because, as I said before, World Anvil is my baby, and when people complain about my baby, I'm like, but it's my baby. One of the things is they forget that we provide all of that support for free, all the tech support for free, all the space and storage of that is all for free. So it's obviously a big project to offer for free, but we feel like we want to support the community. We want to support people who don't necessarily have the money to pay because they're students or because whatever. And the best way to do that is to provide the basis of the tool for free. And that's why we do that. But if you want the privacy feature, which is the main one that people go for, it's like $2.75 a month or something.
Yes. Which is less than a coffee.
Yeah.
That's more than reasonable. Because, like I said, I've seen Hex, you know, do the live screen share with me. I've seen the depth, the amount of drilling down you can get into this. And as a campaign tool, the potential is unlimited.
Yeah, I mean, definitely if you're doing homebrew, I think it's the right tool. You know, like if you're doing anything that you're creating yourself rather than just playing out of a book, it's the thing you need. I mean, that's always been my opinion.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, that's just from my looking at it from the outside. Now you've convinced me I have to look at it from the inside. I got to start playing with it. You've converted me. Like,
there we go. That's the dream.
I've been assimilated like the Borg in Star Trek. Wow. I'm sorry. It's not often that I get speechless, but to offer so much for, you know, basically an unlimited amount of free-to-play time to learn the system, to learn how it all works, before you even have to invest any money as a user is awesome. And I'm big on that. I'm an OSR gamer. I'm very big on having free options to get people into using certain rule sets, but at the same time, having the ability to upgrade to a paid version, whether it's, you know, a full color art filled PDF as opposed to a stripped down PDF, or moving on to the printed version to use at your table. Free to try, or is to me always a huge selling point.
Yeah, and again, like there are people who can't afford $2 a month. Like we have a bunch of students, we have some young people. I was written to the other day by a girl who's 11, who's just started writing a book, and she's writing it with her mother, and they're using World Anvil together.
Awesome.
And awesome. Do you know what? If they want to do that with a freemium version, fantastic. That's awesome. You know, that's fantastic. And, you know, if they want something more serious and more rigorous, then fine, they can pay $2. But, yeah, like the fact that they can, that little 11-year-old girl can start writing a book just using World Anvil for free, I think is super important.
Well, that's great. I mean, all right, so obviously on the blog side, I'm going to have to be doing a user's review on this in a couple of weeks after I get my feet wet. And after PEX calms down, a number of interviews I got to do, so I have a little free time. But that'll happen.
PEX will never calm down.
PEX is awesome. I think the power behind the throne here at All Things Tavern. But so now, if your major update's coming out in about a month, obviously we're going to have you back.
Oh, well, we'd be thrilled. Yeah, I love sitting by the fire and having a chat. So, yeah, absolutely. It's a very exciting one. Again, I can't tell you very much right now, but
that's okay. Oh, that's okay. We have teased the audience, and that's awesome. So
we've teased them. Now let's not make them mad.
No. You wouldn't like them when they're angry. But no, in all In all seriousness, yes, we're going to have you back because not even knowing what the update is, the fact that you have to keep it close to your chest right now or close to your vest in the next month or so, I'm expecting it's going to be a significant update. And I'd love to talk about it. I'd love to talk about World Anvil after I get a chance to play around with it a little bit, maybe plug in one of my homebrew maps that I've worked on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's the maps actually is one of my favorite things because of the amount of interactive functionality you can have with them. And that's nice as a DM because you can like remember where everything is and this kind of stuff. But it's even better for your players because you can give them the map and be like, here you are, click around and explore. This is what you know. And it gives your players that, like, rather than presenting them with a block of text where they're like, ah, too long, didn't read. You can just like give them the clicky aroundy map and they can click around and read snippets about the different locations. And it's a much more intuitive way of learning about a space as well.
Oh, certainly. It combines the visual and the reading at one spot, as opposed to looking back and forth and trying to match them up between the two.
Oh, God, yeah, the director too.
Oh, yeah. Don't we all love that?
My desk is always very messy, so when I'm doing the page flipping, I always end up with like, and there's a fork holding open one page, and there's like a hair tie holding open another page, and like this random collection of objects shoved in the book so that I can find the different pages.
See, that wouldn't work with me. My cat would just rip them all out and play with it, especially for his, you know, hair ties and pencils or forks. Nothing survives her. She's on my desk right now on top of my blotter, so I can't make any notes while I'm talking.
We have three cats, and anyone who's ever done a video call with us, a video meeting, whatever, anyone who's ever seen any of our live streams, know that they just come and go as they please, as cats do. They'll rock it onto the top of a chair. They'll knock something over in the background. They're absolutely hilarious. The worst though is when they're sitting in the middle of the floor, chewing something. You can't see what it is.
Oh, God.
What are you eating?
I know that one very well. My girl loves those little twisty ties from bread and stuff.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, if she finds that, it's never ending. It's like, all right, with my luck, you're going to swallow this. Yes, I'm talking about you. You're looking at me right in the eyes. Yes. And then, of course, in the room right next to us, we have our dog, who the moment we wrap this up, right after it gets wrapped, she'll understand I just wrapped up and start barking. It's like, I was good the whole time. Now come over here and give me attention. Animals are. But, you know, the whole thing with both my cat and video is a lot of my gaming is on VTTs. And my camera is on the desk, and she has a habit of walking by that camera and then like stopping with her ass, like almost right up against the camera, but just far enough away that you can actually see that it's a cat ass as opposed to, it's actually been on a few YouTube videos too. God help us.
I'm ready for my close up, meow.
Yes, yeah. What? Yes, Mr. DeVille, here's my cat ass. Yes. No.
Oh, they are special creatures, aren't they?
Oh, they certainly are. She's my girl. Nobody else can pick her up.
That's one of the reasons I like having animals in RPG games as well, actually. They always end up as everyone's favorite character. I don't know if you noticed that.
Oh, yeah, the ongoing joke at the North Texas RPG Con is Glenn Hallstrom always brings a dog into, Caves of the Unknown? And every year, I think the dog was the only survivor one year, from what I heard. Told TPK, but the dog made it out alive. So,
oh, my God.
Yeah,
well, can't kill the puppy. We all know that.
Not even the game. You're better off killing orc babies than a puppy.
Right, exactly. No. We ended up with a pet wild boar whose name was Pate, I think.
Oh, nice.
This thing came with us everywhere. followed us into dungeons, just like came and hung out with us. It was everybody's favorite character, and one of the NPCs died, and we were sad. But like, if Pate had died, we'd have lost our shit.
Yeah, because animals in game or in real life, they become your family. They become your kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, mind you, I had a stick called Mr. Sticky at one point.
I'm afraid to even go deeper into that one.
It was a quarterstaff. My character had a quarterstaff.
Okay.
She was very cautious, and she sort of poked everything before she engaged. It was sort of one of her personality quirks. And the day she lost that staff was a bad day, where the DM was like, "Yeah, it's gone. Sorry, I've taken that away from you now."
All right, you're gonna have to have. Like Mr. Stick number 2.
Right.
Yeah, it's
right.
Not the same. The second.
You never replaced my quarterstaff.
Oh, look, another tree limb. It's just not the same.
It's right, exactly. Not. It's not Mr. Sticky. Anyway, yeah. The things our characters do, right?
Yep. Wow. Well, I want to thank both of you for taking time out of your day for to drop in here for our little fireside chat. I really appreciate it.
Oh, our pleasure. It's been really fun.
And that's the whole reason why we call them fireside chats. Interviews are just too formal. So
yeah.
Somebody suggested a fireside chat because, you know, that way it's just, you're hanging out.
Yeah, less stress too. It's less intimidating as well.
It is. It's like an interview. Oh my God, fireside chat. It's like going down to the pub, you know, pulling up a stool, sitting next to the fire, drinking your beer or your scotch, and yapping to friends.
Yeah, absolutely. I joke with Dimitri a lot that I have to put on my human suit when I deal with humans, because I'm quite zany, I'm very high energy, I'm a little bit weird, as you may or may not have known from this chat. There's a lot of times when we have meetings where I feel like I have to be an adult human, and it's tough. But I have not felt like that this whole chat, so that's been great. I have left the human suit on the shelf.
That's because I've never been an adult human. It kind of works out pretty well. Yeah, I might have a kid that's 25, but trust me, I feel younger than him in a lot of ways. So, the best thing about retirement is that you can give up some of those responsibilities of being an adult human.
I can imagine that.
Yeah. So, well, again, thank you both. This has been really good. Oh. So now you do know that you have to reach out to Pex in a couple of weeks, and we got to work out a follow-up.
Yeah, we will let Pex know when we're about to drop the secret project.
I think everybody will know when we're about to.
Everybody will know.
Sounds like a plan. Well, again, thank you both. I've had a blast. To my audience that's listening, this has been great. We will find out more in about a month, give or take, about the big secret. And on that note, I'm going to bid everybody adieu. As usual, God bless. Roll your dice well. And I will talk with you all tomorrow.